Again, a whole lot happening. We have most of it up at the site, all the important stories. And interestingly enough, in the state of Washington, there is a lot of talk about how Seattle researchers were screening for the normal flu, and they wanted to test for the coronavirus. But the federal government said, stop testing. Stop testing. For weeks, thousands of flu samples sat in Seattle as researchers sought to test and flag them for coronavirus. But the CDC would not allow it. When the testing finally did happen, it was too late. The virus was upon us. That's a quote out of the New York Times. Seattle Middle School is now closed due to a teacher with the virus. That means virtually every kid at the school has been exposed, all the staff, bus drivers, all the buses, you name it, all the classrooms, all family members. They should all be quarantined, I guess. Patient zero spread the coronavirus despite Ebola-style lockdown. This is a story out of Bloomberg. Interesting story. There's a lot of them there. A lot of them there. Here's one other. Let me find it here. Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan says today in Seattle there may be as many as 1,100 cases. 6 weeks from now, that number could be in excess of 70,000 cases. And for those of you thinking that the warm weather may influence the virus, we don't know. There's a lot of diversity in terms of opinion about that from scientists and others who study these things. They're not sure. They don't know. They won't know till we get there. In Massachusetts, close to 100 cases now, and the vast majority of them, I think 80%, came out of one conference. It's a very interesting dynamic there, showing how volatile this particular virus is. Dr. Henry Nyman is back with us tonight, as usual. Hello, Henry. Welcome back. Crazy out there. Getting crazy.
Hi, Jeff. It is crazy, and actually, your introduction was good. I actually wanted to start off talking about that Biogen conference, and I think that kind of encapsulates this whole pandemic. I'm not sure why WHO hasn't officially declared a pandemic if you saw the definitions. And
playing games. I don't know why. There's something at work here.
Yeah. There are a lot of games going on, and I think this Biogen conference, it's a long story in the Boston Globe, but I'll just give you the little summary. I'll actually read it because it's, I can't do it justice. But as you said, there's 92 cases in Massachusetts, and 70 of them are from this conference. And it's got a lot in common with the Metropole Hotel, except it's not a tourist hotel in Hong Kong. It's actually the Marriott in Boston, and it was a company meeting, except the company was a multinational company. And I'll just read this this one sentence. It says that is 70, including by Tuesday night, including employees and those who came in contact with them. That doesn't include a cascade of individual cases in Tennessee, North Carolina, Indiana, New Jersey, Washington, D.C., and Norway, and suspected cases in Germany, Austria, and Argentina.
One conference.
Now, this is one meeting, and it's I think it encapsulates the absurdity of the response to this pandemic in the United States. And there's some comparisons between this and the Metropole Hotel. Like I said, it's kind of one location. And they got people infected, and they flew around the world and seeded multiple countries. And in this case, it wasn't Hong Kong in China. It was Boston in the United States. And it wasn't the beginning of the outbreak. This just happened. So this outbreak's been, or pandemic, it's not even an outbreak. This pandemic has been going for 3 months. And this is on the East Coast this week. I mean, this is as of tonight. This meeting took place last week. And it was pretty clear last week that there was a pandemic. And it was pretty clear that you didn't have to be coming from Wuhan to bring the virus in. This particular conference did have people from Italy that came to the conference, and didn't have anybody from Wuhan, didn't have anybody from China, but it is a multinational company. And this is a biotech. The people at this conference are scientists. And they started getting flu-like symptoms, and they were in Boston, and they were pretty close to Mass General Hospital, and they started getting flu-like symptoms, and they were concerned. They thought they might have COVID-19, so they went to Mass General, and they said, "Hey, I need to be tested. I think we've got COVID-19.
Breathing all over everyone, of course, touching everything.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, what did they say? We can't test you. You don't meet the case definition.
No, don't meet the
profile. Sorry.
Come again. Some other time.
Right. Come back. Come back when you...
you're critical.
Go to China. Go to China and come back and we can take care of you.
It's unbelievable. So, Henry, excuse me, but... Honest to goodness, this to me smacks of true criminal negligence in terms of government policy.
Those are the rules. Those are the rules. and so it kept on going. I mean, then another wave came in, and they said, "Yeah, we got a lot of people at this conference with flu-like symptoms, and we think it's COVID-19." And they said the same thing. Yeah, you guys. Okay. Yeah, have you been to China? And this, I mean, think about it. This is last week. You've already had an explosion of cases in Europe. Already had all of these cases in Europe. There was from people in Italy. They had people at this conference from Italy. Okay, and regardless of where it came from, they had all of these people with flu-like symptoms. Mm-hmm. So at a bare minimum, they could have said, "Well, let's see if you got the flu." And if you've got a whole room full of people that have flu-like symptoms and none of them have the flu, and they've got somebody there from Italy, well, maybe it is COVID-19. But they didn't do that. They just sent them away.
It just boggles
the mind.
And then
it kind of moved up the chain. Mm-hmm. And they called Mass General and they said, "We've got all of these people. They've got flu-like symptoms, and we've already been by there a couple times, and we can't get tested." And then they said, "Well, you can't come here now because you'll overwhelm the system. There's too many now."
Oh, no.
We got to get this set up so that we can handle it. I think they initially tested 3, and they got 3 positives, and then all of a sudden, I mean, I had sent in something a couple of days ago that it had gotten up to 23. Mm-hmm. Now it's up to 70. Right. And that's 70 that who live in Boston, you know, that were at the meeting. This doesn't count. I mean, it's a multinational company. They got executives and employees that go to multiple locations around the world. They go to conferences all the time. And so they're going to go from one conference to the next conference. And this is a constant thing with the biotech in the the United States is a mature biotech, so they have different relationships with investment companies, with other biotech companies, with suppliers. I mean, it's and you've got all these people that went to this company meeting, and they're all infected, and they can't get tested. And so eventually, they got around to being tested.
That's criminal negligence.
The difference between this outbreak and SARS, the Metropole Hotel, everyone at the Metropole Hotel, it was still a mystery disease. They didn't really have a test that they could get them because they didn't even know what was causing the outbreak. And then when the doctor came there and he ended up infecting the people at the hotel, and they flew off to Toronto and Hanoi and Singapore and Hong Kong. They walked over to Hong Kong, but you know they went in the hospital there. And then all the healthcare workers that were seeing them started coming down with it. Then it was real clear that it was a problem, and it wasn't limited to Guangdong province. This mystery disease had gone international, and that kind of got the entire scientific community, well, not the entire, but they got a significant number of researchers involved.
I cannot believe what you're reporting, and I'm glad you're telling everyone this. And I'm sure a lot of you out there don't believe it either. This virus has been established here for 2 months when this conference happens, and they can't get tested, and there's somebody going to defend that as a government policy, CDC policy. It's indefensible. It's unbelievable. And you must have had a super spreader from Italy
It's utter stupidity.
Beyond, it's suicidal stupidity.
All of Europe is getting new cases day by day. It's exploding. I have said when this happened that it was actually on the 7-year anniversary of the Metropole Hotel. And I said that this was a tipping point because it was in Iran and it was in Italy. And those two countries were basically spreading it throughout the Middle East and throughout Europe. And both of those areas had been relatively limited in the number of cases they had. And this was just coming one right after the other, right after the other. And then it started to go out. It went to Algeria. It went to Brazil. It went to Mexico. It went to Canada. It went everywhere but the United States. And that's because the United States was only looking for people from China. You had to come from China. Yeah, if you didn't come from China,
you don't get tested.
It didn't matter whether we had a test kit or not. We weren't testing you. You didn't meet the definition. And we'd just be wasting a test. You know, we're only looking at people from China. And all you got to do is read the newspaper or take a look at what's going on in Europe, in the Middle East, and know that a lot of people go there on a ski vacation. A lot of students go there on a school vacation. They go to Europe. They go around. And they go to Italy. And so the idea that they come to the United States and they've got all the symptoms, and they can't be tested because they didn't come from China.
Astonishing.
And then they go, they say, well, we got a handle on this. You know, we stopped people from coming from China. It would have been a whole lot worse had we not done that. And we took this, you know, we were the first to get in there, and we were screening these people from China. Last week, they weren't taking anybody from Italy. I mean, these guys.
Well, they closed the front door and left the back door wide open, is what they did.
It was wide open. Everybody could see it was open. And it had been open because by the time they were spreading all over the place in Europe, they were spreading all over the case in the U. All over the place in the U.S. because people came from Italy to the U.S. And the fact that they could pick it up in Brazil, I mean, they could pick it up in Nigeria. Yeah. So Nigeria could identify a case from Italy when the U.S. couldn't. because they didn't test. And you know, then on top of it, they didn't have enough kits. But I mean, they couldn't even get a sample and send it to the CDC because they didn't meet the case definition. And the comparison between what's happening here and what happened in China or in Hong Kong, at least in Hong Kong, it was a mystery disease. They really didn't have a test yet. It ended up mobilizing the scientific community. They ended up identifying it as a novel coronavirus. They ended up developing a test. And then they found that, they got the test in circulation pretty quickly. All these labs had their own test, and they all were doing their own testing.
Health laboratories around the country, 103 of them, as I remember it. And they were all trying to come up with their own way to test.
Yeah, and so here in this outbreak, it was there was a partial sequence at the end of December already that indicated it was a novel coronavirus. They had a full sequence early in January.
Right.
Once you have a sequence and you publish the sequence, anybody in the world can read the sequence and figure out what kind of probes to make. And one of the reasons they can do that was because of the SARS outbreak. Because of the SARS outbreak, many different countries had their institutions involved with identifying the novel coronavirus, but then trying to figure out where it came from, and then end up doing studies in bats and see that there are a lot of coronaviruses out there, and discovered a couple new coronaviruses that were involved with human disease. It turns out they were mild. There was one in the Netherlands, they named it NL63, and there was one in Hong Kong, and they named it HKU for Hong Kong University number one. And both of those caused fairly mild disease in children, but they were the source of various respiratory diseases that children got, but they didn't really know what caused it until they discovered these. So they discovered a couple cold viruses that were present in children. They already knew when they identified the SARS virus that there were a couple of other cold viruses that were common in the human population. And because they had those four, and then they subsequently identified MERS, so they had that one as a fifth, and then they had the SARS as a sixth. By the time this virus came along, they could go and line up all those sequences, and they could say, well, if we want to make one this specific for this particular virus, we take this region and this region and this region, and that's what we use for our primers, and we make the probes. And it's going to identify the SARS, the novel, SARS-2, if you want, virus. And it's not going to cross-react with the other ones. Right. It's not going to cross-react with these other coronaviruses that are known. It's going to be specific for this. You're not going to go and identify somebody that's got a mild cold virus.
Kind of a no-brainer. And so
to make the kit isn't a big deal. They went and they had a lab in Germany that went ahead and had made kits for MERS. They went ahead and made kits for COVID for this SARS CoV-2. And it was published, and WHO used them, and they went and made a whole bunch of kits. And here we say we're going to make our own kit, and we're going to make it, a little bit complicated. We're going to put in this other one that's going to cross-react with other coronaviruses and make sure it's kind of a negative control, that if that one's positive, then that means that they picked up some other coronavirus and it's not the one that they're looking for. And
let me interject one thing. Let me pop one thing in here. To this moment, right now, the best data I have, maybe Henry's got some better, about 4,900 tests have been run in the United States in total. And many of those tests have been done by private public health labs, not the CDC. So without those private health labs, I don't know what the CDC's credentials are, maybe 2,000 tests. To give you all an example, the perspective, South Korea has tested over 150,000 people. And you're going to tell me, someone's going to tell me that we can't duplicate somehow what South Korea is able to do? No. I smell a rat. You can call it stupid, people, ladies and gentlemen, dumb, anything you want. I'm not sure that there might not be some. I don't know what to think. It's almost as if somebody wanted the damn virus to get hold of you.
It's stupid. Believe me, it's stupid.
Well, it's beyond belief.
There's no
and where does the buck stop? It stops in the Oval Office, right? All right, this is the administration.
This is just stupid. This is just stupid, and they made
and
a mistake.
Deadly.
And they couldn't correct it. They took forever. They had contamination. There were problems with the lab. It's just,
you got a super spreader at that Biogen conference from Italy, I think, Henry. No? Wouldn't that be a good guess? This is really virulent stuff.
And you had a good-sized conference, and they were all kind of packed together there, and they spent 2 or 3 days together, and it started going around. And they kept going around, and they knew they had COVID, and they and you
they
know
couldn't
it, was probably,
get
it was probably just down the block to go to Mass General. They go to Mass General Hospital, and they can't get tested. You know, so they got a they've got a premier biotech company. They got a premier hospital. You know, blocks away, they got COVID all over the place, and they say, "Come back when you go to China." It's utter stupidity.
Down
all
in medical
the way across.
History,
it wasn't that they didn't have a kit. You know, they wouldn't take a sample. And then when they finally got three positives, then they couldn't come because they couldn't handle them because they had hundreds of people to test, or 100 anyway. And so, you know, the...
Go away. We can't handle you. Go away.
Wow. Right. And meanwhile, the virus flew across the United States, and it flew across the world. I mean, all of these states that I listed, they're not in the 70 total. These are additional ones that they've gone to all these other states since then, because all of these employees went to various locations, or their family members went, or whoever went, and they've spread it, you know, all over the place. And this is probably the version is very contagious and deadlier. It's the one that's
the
going in Italy. They shut down the entire country. So they've got the whole country shut down. And we just started to say, well, let's see what if we can shut down the U.S. You know, just don't test, send these guys out, and let's see what happens. And that's essentially kind of where we stand from
this
one,
is really going to be, it's one, going to go down in medical meeting. History. I think, without question, it has to.
And then, well, then they do the same thing with the cruise ships. I mean, and that's why, you know, the idea that A, people don't believe it's here, or B, think it's some hoax or something, is just ridiculous. It's here, it's been here, and it's a pandemic. It's not being called a pandemic. It's being misrepresented as being less deadly than SARS. And it's being misrepresented in that, well, you know, we can kind of flatten the curve and it's not going to be that bad. But even if it isn't that bad, because it's kind of, you know, it kind of took off the first year. And the way these pandemics work is they kind of get started in one flu season. You know, in this case, it's a coronavirus, but it's still reasonable that there's going to be a seasonal aspect to it. And so in the fall and winter is when it basically does most of its damage, and it kind of spills over till the spring, and then it kind of starts to fade a little bit in the summer, but then it comes back in the fall. And the concern with this virus is that it's going to come back with a vengeance. And the reason it's going to come back with a vengeance is between the spring and the fall, it's going to change a little because it's in the human population now. And unlike SARS, it's in human population big time. And so it's got lots of people to infect, lots of recombination to happen, and lots of opportunity for a new and improved version that isn't recognized.
This is what viruses do,
dear friends.
This is what they do.
Right. And it's a new version that isn't well recognized by the antibodies that are made against version one. Mm-hmm. And then there's some evidence that says the antibodies made against version one actually will enhance version two. And they'll actually use the antibody to get into more cells and to use that kind of, to get, use it as a receptor.
How often does that happen, Henry?
The virus can actually turn
a defense system against itself and use it.
It did that with dengue, and it did it in the Philippines, and that's why there's a big anti-vaccine movement there, and that was because they went and they had a vaccine for one type of dengue, and it worked for that, and it got that version under control. But another version of dengue, as a result of those antibodies being there, that facilitated it, and so people that got the other version had a worse version of that virus. And that happened in that, and there's evidence that the same thing happens with coronavirus. And so that's a concern that in the fall, if it follows a seasonal pattern and it recombines, which is virtually guaranteed. I mean, the coronaviruses were shown to recombine by Mike Lai, who I went to school with. And, he was actually an assistant professor when I was a graduate student at USC. He showed it recombined in 1992. So it's not a new story. It's known that coronaviruses do recombine. And that's what they do. So there's a reasonably good chance that in the fall, there'll be a new and improved version of the virus. It, unlike SARS, is not going to fade away because it jumped species and didn't really get a good toehold. This one jumps species and has a polybasic cleavage site so that it can get into a lot of different cell types. It's going to be ready to rock and roll in the fall, but it's still going to do its damage in the spring. I mean, this Biogen conference is a good example where you had a bunch of people in one location. And when it spread through that, they couldn't even get tested. And then these guys flew out of there. And if it went to all of these different states and it went to all of these different countries,
and this is the bad strain. Remember that. That's critical.
And this is just one meeting. they got an outbreak in New York now. They're actually they're bringing out the National Guard to it's not like they're going to keep people in that one location. They're there to essentially clean the place up. And try to get the schools ready.
One square mile, supposedly, New Rochelle, and they're trying to make everyone stay put for a while. It ain't going to happen, though. Not going to work.
Well, they've got over 100 cases, and they're not really exactly having them stay put. They're free to come and go, but they're there to kind of zero in and, not have school, not have any mass gatherings, try to keep the virus from expanding exponentially. And that's essentially what it's doing. They've got over 100 confirmed cases there. Right. New Rochelle is not, that big of a town. It's kind of centered in this synagogue that the index case went to, and he infected his family, and then they infected other members of the congregation.
Well, I think some of them went to the APAC conference, too. didn't they? And I took it back.
Yeah, I think that there were two from New York. I think they're related to this outbreak. And then the one in Toronto was APEC. So from that conference, at least three people were infected. And one went to Los Angeles, one went to Cleveland, and one went to Toronto. And so those three are all confirmed cases that that went to the meeting and were identified in those three cities that they ended up going to.
Just got a note that Washington Governor Jay Inslee is going to ban all gatherings and events of more than 250 people in virtually the entire Seattle metro area. That's coming.
The concept behind that is that they don't think that they can necessarily stop the spread, and they don't think they can even, over time, lower the number of people that get infected. But they do think that they can flatten the curve so that instead of having a big event where a lot of people get infected and then they all end up developing symptoms and they all, you know, the ones that are severe enough that have to go to the hospital all end up going to the hospital at the same time, and then they overwhelm the hospital and therefore they can't really get optimal treatment, and then they end up having more severe disease and more deaths simply because the local community isn't equipped to handle that type of a surge. So if they kind of dampen it down and it kind of spreads more slowly, then people will come to the hospital over a longer time period and they'll be better able to handle them. And that's kind of what the goal is now as far as limiting crowds. And that's been one of the messages that's come out.
I like that term, kind of flattening the curve. That really spells it out perfectly. That's what they're trying to do. Reduce the drama.
That way, because it's there's still plenty of people in the hospitals from the flu season, and it's not like they've got a lot of beds available. And if they get a big surge of cases, then everything's overwhelmed, and then that increases the likelihood that healthcare workers are going to get infected, and then they're going to run out of healthcare workers, and the beds are going to be full, so they're going to run out of beds, and ECMO machines are all in use, so they're run out of ECMO machines, and so they can't really treat the patient optimally, and then there's no real proven medication, so they essentially the severe cases, all they can do is help them breathe, essentially, or oxygenate their blood.
That's right.
And there's a limitation as to how many of those machines they have. So if they get
to also notice that there is no discussion by the CDC or anyone else that I've seen about a mass production of face masks that certainly all the infected should be wearing, but those who aren't infected have a right to have that kind of protection, even if it is minimal, according to some. There's no talk of it. Nothing. Nothing is changing, at least on the surface.
The talk is that there's there are
you
other
had that
masks.
Call yesterday from that Portland doctor. Anything else on that?
Well, yeah. I just heard that they're going to take masks. I don't know what they're supposed to originally be for, but they're not supposed to be high end that they use in hospitals, and they got
masks.
Those, and they're gonna approve those for use by hospitals. So they're gonna say,
healthcare workers are gonna be wearing something like a painter's mask. And
correct.
Thinking that they're
correct.
Getting,
so they're saying, no, painters, it's not airborne, it's droplets, so you can use a painter's mask, and you're good to go. And so so I think that's how they're tackling the shortage of masks. They're kind of expanding what masks are useful and are usable, And they're not going to give the same benefits. And that's what the situation is. So there's shortages of everything. There's shortage of tests, which should be, you know, somewhat resolved by the commercial kits that are available. So they should be able to just order from Quest or order from LabCorp. And, you know, these are companies that do routine testing for a lot of different things. And, you know,
the state of Oregon's down to less than 200 test kits now. 200 tests, I think, period. Not kits, tests. They're virtually out of tests.
Yeah. So, I mean, from what I understand, if they do lab corporate tests, it takes a couple of days longer to get results because they got to ship things back and forth, or back anyway. They got to send it out to wherever they're running these tests, and it takes a couple extra days. And that's a lot of what it was like with the swine flu. That's how that started out when they started getting it. I mean, initially, you had to go to the CDC, and then that was the only virus in circulation. They were saying just use a, you know, if it's influenza A, it's the swine flu because the seasonal flu isn't really around anymore. And then they did start to develop kits locally, so in-house kits, and that way they could get a quick turnaround. And then soon they found that you know, everybody with swine flu symptoms was positive on the test, or at least it was a high enough percentage that they figured the ones that weren't positive on the test, it was probably, you know, an issue with how the sample was collected or something along those lines that they were, that once they get it, I think 70% was the cutoff. They were getting 70% positives, and they assumed that meant that it was really 100%. 30% of them, there was some issue with how the sample was collected or something. And they said, don't bother. Don't bother sending it in. If you got flu-like symptoms, you got the flu. And if you got the flu, you got swine flu. And you don't even need to test now. And this will be the same thing. Yeah, especially in a month or two when flu season's pretty much run its course, if you got flu-like symptoms and you know, you got breathing difficulties and fever. They'll say you got COVID-19, and you know the test is just gonna
right. Well, let me jump over to Italy real quick. They had another almost 200 dead overnight. I think I forgot the numbers. But it's skyrocketing right now.
That's what's got them. The numbers, I mean, they're over 10,000 cases now. The numbers I've got is 10,149 cases, 631 dead, 877 serious, and 1,000 that are recovered. So,
so that's 800 dead, 1,000 recovered. All right, there you go.
600
that's how you
dead, 800 serious, and 1,000 recovered, right. And just for comparison, I mean, Iran has got a little bit less. They got 8,000, but they only are acknowledging 291 dead. So they've got less than half as many dead with almost as many cases. And South Korea, for comparison, you know, they've been doing a lot of testing. So as a result of a lot of testing, they're going to get a lot of mild cases. And so they're going to have a much lower case fatality rate as long as they count all the cases and don't limit the pneumonia like they did with SARS. And so they've got 7,700 cases, and they've only got 60 deaths. So it's a much lower number, but it's because they've identified a lot of mild cases that probably wouldn't normally even go to the doctors. They would have maybe a minor cough or something, and by doing, you know, tens of or hundreds of thousands of tests, they're able to identify those people and get their cases high, but it isn't, you know, it doesn't end up creating a large number of deaths. But anyway, I mean, one other thing, I didn't do a whole lot of stories today because I've been looking at some of the sequences. I can go through that a little bit. There's a lot of sequences that have been submitted, and I think I'd mentioned this earlier. There's one whole series from the Diamond Princess, and these are the U.S. cases, and they kind of look like the original Wuhan sequence without a whole lot of changes. And in contrast, there were three from Japan that had the same marker that you're seeing in Italy. So it looks like there was some segregation on the boat, that on the ship, that they had at least two introductions. And one of them was probably a little bit milder than the other, and the U.S. cases had that milder version, whereas the Japanese cases had the other. And then a bunch of sequences just came out from the Grand Princess, the current ship that's now docked in Oakland, but these aren't from those passengers. These are from the passengers that took the prior voyage that went from San Francisco down to Mexico and back. And that was between February 11th to the 21st. And that's the one that raised the alarm on the current one, because one of the patients on the earlier one died, and another one tested positive, so they had two positives. And then they started, they realized that they should track down all of the passengers that were on the earlier cruise, and that's when they found out that 62 of them had stayed and took the same ship to Hawaii, and then was going to go to Mexico and back. And they intercepted them. But in the meantime, they had the manifest of the ones that went on the earlier trip. And I had kind of put together a list, and I was up to 22 people that had been confirmed, and they were spread across the United States and into Canada. And they represented the first case, the first confirmed case in several of the states. There was Minnesota, I think it was Tennessee, and it was up in Alberta, Canada. Right. And in any event, the UC San Francisco started sequencing some of the California residents that had been on the first trip, and those came out today. And they kind of verified what the initial one was. There was one that was from the Solano County patient that they had identified initially, along with the one that had died. And that one indicated that they had the Seattle sequence. So the sequence is the spreading in Seattle was on the first Grand Princess trip. And then the six sequences that came out today also were the Seattle sequence. So they all matched Seattle, but they had evolved, and they had evolved enough, and there were enough differences. It looks like there were multiple introductions into that ship from Seattle, you know, or at least traced back to Seattle. So the Seattle had the same sequence. There were three markers that were present in the first case in the U.S., which was in the Seattle area. And then the first community transmission in the area actually matched that sequence. But the ones that were in King County had two additional changes. And all of the sequences on the Grand Princess had those two additional changes. So it indicated that they did come from Seattle, but they were a couple of different lineages that had kind of separated out, indicating that there was more than one introduction. So, I mean, these sequences will allow tracing. Both people that were in Seattle, as well as because there have been a few people that have been listed as being ex-Seattle or ex that long-term care facility, and this would confirm
that facility is one of they've had reports that other facilities are concerned now as well. You get people going in there to visit those who are under long-term care all the time. I don't know how many in that one particular hospital, the first one, Life Something, ended up being infected, but it was the majority, I believe, and there's still no end to it.
Yeah, and I think that the majority of the fatalities there. And,
correct.
So that's part of the reason there are many deaths there. But now they're showing up. I think it was North Dakota, it was North or South Dakota, announced their first cases. And they had five cases that were announced today, and those were the first five. So that kind of tells you that, well, I guess they can test now. And the thing that stood out about the five is it was South Dakota. And what stood out about the five was it included one death. So usually, you know, the deaths take a while before they start showing up. And that indicates that, again, the lack of testing has allowed the virus to kind of propagate there and got somebody sick enough that they've died already, even though these were the first cases announced for South Dakota that happened today. So
How commonly are people dying and not being tested? Therefore, they're not being described as coronavirus fatalities. It's happening a lot, right?
Sure. Everybody that was dying prior to last week was just a pneumonia case. You know, they didn't test them because they didn't, you know, if they didn't come from Wuhan, they weren't going to test them. So they were just put down as atypical pneumonia.
And Henry has been saying
there are a lot that are already dead that were never tested.
Right.
And Henry's been saying they don't meet the case definition.
It's really important. The CDC set this case definition standard out, which was so asinine and stupid. And you heard about it when he described the Biogen conference and Mass General, that a lot of people, unfortunately, are going to be, as a result of that, infected and ultimately dead. That's what stupidity can do, and that's what's happened here.
Yeah, and you know, several have used the same term, saying that we're just flying blind. I mean, you've got a pandemic, and you're not testing. Yeah. You have no idea where it is. You just know it's in the United States, and there's a lot of it. And it's still going on here in Pennsylvania. Okay, I personally know how bad it is, but they just started testing in Pennsylvania like the end of last week, and there's already 12 cases now. There's 12 cases in Pennsylvania, and the number of cases in Western Pennsylvania is zero. So they're all in Eastern Pennsylvania. Most are actually in Montgomery County. They've already declared a state of emergency there. And I know that you can get tested in Pittsburgh if you've recently been in Philadelphia. That's how bad it is in Eastern Pennsylvania. So you'll
that's the criteria.
The definition.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the criteria, that if you've been to an area of active transmission, and that
that's sensible. Yeah,
Philadelphia meets that definition now. But Philadelphia, the Philadelphia area, actually the 12th case was in Philadelphia itself. The rest are in the most of them are in the suburbs, or the two a little bit north up by Scranton, but the rest are in the Philadelphia area. And one of them's in critical condition is a cardiologist. But the bottom line is, there are cases in western Pennsylvania. There are zero confirmed cases in western Pennsylvania because they still have criteria that are specific enough that they're really not testing. They're testing very little in western Pennsylvania now, and so they've got zero cases, even though Pittsburgh's a pretty big city. And people do take a vacation to Italy and come back to Pittsburgh, and believe me, they bring the virus with them. But they're not official cases yet. So it's still going on. The lack of testing is still there. It's an absurd situation in view of the fact that you really have a pandemic, even if WHO doesn't declare it. And it's, you don't test, you don't get confirmed cases, and under
don't
control,
test, don't
unquote.
Tell. That's it.
Yeah.
All right, Henry. Well done. And we'll be back tomorrow night with another edition as we continue to track the coronavirus pandemic. Thanks, Henry. Take care.
Okay, very good. Take care.
Back tomorrow night, everyone. Be safe, be sensible, and be prepared. Talk to you tomorrow.